Hello, everyone.
Morning. Look out. It's the urchin kids.
That's what they call us, is it, Dan?
The urchin gang.
The urchin gang.
We're not the spooky gang.
Yeah.
We're the mic morons. The Mikey gang.
All our listeners expect a tight 30, don't they?
A tight 30. You started the timer.
Yeah.
We're already on 29 minutes, 40 seconds.
Dan, what are we talking about this week?
How's your week been, man?
It's been all right.
Talk to me.
It's been all right. I can say what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm actually doing it more for me. I'm making a loop pack, a sample pack.
The first, it's probably more the Matt Ingram one.
It's the Matt Ingram
definitely
one.
Definitely a searching associated.
Basically, I might not even release it to the public. I'm doing it for me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm doing it. Because I'm in, like, a lot of times I'm in sessions and I'm like, okay, I'm in a writing session.
Yeah.
And it's that point where, okay, this thing I'm making now needs a beat.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't want something programmed. And then suddenly I'm on Splice and trying to find a beat that's the right sound. And
yeah,
it's simple. And it's, I hate it. So I was like, right, okay, I'm just going to make.
Do you want to tell the listeners what, because there's obviously lots of great sounding shit on Splice.
Lots.
And for those who are uninitiated, Splice is a sort of an online.
An enormous sample library.
It's one sample library to rule them all, essentially, isn't it? It's got really good. It's actually the search functions. Things are tagged. You can find your way around stuff. You can set BPMs and things. But I know that there's a certain lack of something or other in there.
My issue with anything on Splice is that it has too much of a sound.
Yeah.
Like, so you find something that feels, oh, that feels about right. So it can be anything. It can be a synth loop or even every producer I pulled all sorts of things out of Splice.
Mm.
But particularly with beats, you find something that feels right. And it's either got loads of reverb on or some weird phaser, or it's got a tambourine in it as well. Or just something. It's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
So,
and those sorts of things are like, they're useful if you need to get, if you want to get an idea going.
Yeah.
Then you can, because I sometimes just will just grab some stuff off. If I want to just sort of try a new thing out in Ableton, if I've learned something in Ableton, for example.
Yeah.
And I just need some material.
Yeah.
I'll sort of grab some loops. But it definitely, because of the strong sonic characteristic that most of it has, it pushes you in a direction.
Well, I'd say more than that. It totally backs you into a corner. Like you can't, it doesn't give you anywhere to go.
Yeah.
And I've realized in doing this loop pack, my taste in drums is very simple.
Yeah.
I like really simple things.
Yeah.
And a lot, like most beats in Splice are really complicated. Or there's like
there'll be a delay with a phaser on it.
No, I don't want this. I just want something that goes or something.
Yeah. I think I found two packs on Splice after some digging, one of which is some like vibey hits.
Yeah.
But they're still not, you can't make a convincing drum part out of them.
This is the thing as well. Yeah, absolutely. I think if you have single hits and put them on the grid, they just don't sound like drums. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm making this thing for me. And the idea is that it's really simple beats that are very bendable.
Yeah.
So you can add distortion, you can add reverb, you can add, I've started playing with them. And it turns out if you record something, I'm not going to say it's like vanilla, but record something without committing to a certain sound.
Yeah.
You can bend it so many ways.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah. Oh, right. So I was thinking of when you said sound, my brain said idea, but that's different, isn't it? It's like...
Sound, yeah. It's just like the way it is sonically.
Yeah.
But it's that's what I've been doing this week.
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing it the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. You're definitely going to be learning something.
I'm learning something. Yeah.
I guess.
I'm learning how bespoke a drum part is.
Yeah. We discussed this last week.
And I'm doing the opposite, making these drum loops.
Yeah.
Last week I said, when I play the drums, what I do is incredibly bespoke to the track that I'm playing on.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm trying to do the opposite. I'm trying to make an 8-bar drum loop that can kind of, not that can be used for anything,
yeah,
but it's just super pliable.
Yeah. I guess the only way that you're going to know, it's going to evolve, isn't it? And often when you get like a new piece of equipment, and I suppose you're trying to make a tool, yeah, equipment's not the right word, but a tool, you're trying to make a tool which you think is going to be useful, there comes a point where you've been in a session, you've gone like, oh, wouldn't it be great if there was this thing, you've looked for it, it doesn't exist, so you make it, you've then got to go full circle and actually try and use the things that you've made in a session.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you'll find out their strengths and weaknesses, I guess.
I don't know if there's going to be a need for this. I know I need it. Right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's,
And I've already tested them out, and I'm like, this is going to be, for me, for what I like and for my taste, this loop pack I'm making is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And if no one else buys it, it's still going to be worth doing because I'm going to use it all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know if there's like literally thousands of producers all over the world that need this.
If it's useful to you, it's probably useful to me.
That's what I mean.
You know? I mean, you can sort me out, you know, special pricing and
whatnot.
Special
price,
you know?
Mate. Yeah. Anyway, so
special discount.
That's what I've been doing.
Yeah. But if it addresses a problem for you, surely it addresses a problem for...
Right.
There's going to be tons of other people out there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously Splice kind of dominates the
loop world.
The loop market.
Yeah. And then the only other thing that people do who are not drummers, you know, because obviously if they're drummers or they have access to drums, you probably play your part. You've obviously got your kind of superior drummers and such like.
Easy drummers.
And a lot of that stuff sounds
great.
Sounds really good.
Sounds great, yeah.
But it doesn't do what you do.
Yeah.
Which is play a part and kind of have feel. And it's, yeah, like there is...
Everything's also, I would say that like on Splice, all of the drum parts, I'm really generalizing but a lot of them, everything's just so spanked.
Yeah.
Like the drums are just hit, they're like rock drums. Everything's like hit really hard. It has like loads of compression and it's really bright and really loud. And just everything is just like maximum. Everything's just dialed up to 11 in every way.
That's almost like, the meal has been cooked and it's been plated and it's on the table.
But
whereas you're like, here's the fresh herbs.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Now cook.
But I do get it. And it's interesting on these sites, you're competing against other samples.
Yeah.
And maybe if someone hears something that's not super loud, not super hyped, they're going to go, well, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Why would I use that?
It is annoying when I bring in any sample from any pack. And the first thing you have to do is turn it down.
Turn it down. Turn it down and take off usually take off a bit of high end as well.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
I mean,
God,
I think probably you've got to supply it at least normalized. But not crushed. Or pre-crushed. Pre-mastered.
Pre-mastered. That's it. But that's it. Yeah, I just made the point. That's the thing, though, because in the sample market, you want your sample to... feel exciting. Like Chad Blake said, loud is better.
There we go. And if Chad Blake said it...
He said that in the context of a massive interview, actually.
Yeah.
but he said, you know, people, including myself, prefer louder.
Yeah. It's that short-term thing, you know, it's that loud... You get an instant hit. You get the buzz, the excitement.
Exactly.
Oh, that's loud, that's exciting.
Yes.
And I guess when you're clicking through a sample library, you're kind of experiencing that high every time you change a sample.
Also, I think that the kids that I work with today, Dan.
Those under 30.
When I first started recording...
When did you start?
You know, like my first experiences in a studio, and I've spoken to some older engineers about this.
Mm.
the tracking stage and the mix stage were sort of very separate.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying is a good or a bad thing, because there was a lot of people that I know had a lot of problems with it. Oh, don't worry, we'll get the sound in the mix.
Yeah,
don't get the sound in the mix. But now a lot of the young people I work with have an expectation about the sound.
Yeah.
When you're quote unquote tracking, that it has to be kind of finished, because there's just that expectation, which I don't mind.
I think actually I'm gonna throw this out there. I think the ability to craft and collect your sound as you move through the process, whilst still being able to tweak it at the mix stage, i.e. getting sounds going in plugins, is like one of, if not the biggest advantage of digital recording, I would say.
Yeah.
Because you're focusing ideas. I mean, the only way that's kind of better from that regard is committing your sound straight to tape.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then you're really focusing what you're doing. But like this project that I've been doing now for a couple of weeks, it does seem to be vitally important that we have, it doesn't have to be the final sound. Like the vocals have still got the aforementioned rat distortion pedal on them. It sounds good. It's not necessarily the case that, I'm sure some of the tracks will probably have that same plugin on the vocals.
Yeah.
I doubt the settings would be exactly the same.
Sure.
But if I suddenly bypass that plugin, it really just quite can jolt the mix, the whole sound of the track into the wrong sort of space. And also the ability to sing through it is kind of quite, and the vocalist has been quite clear. He's got a very clear idea of the sonic characteristic of each track, if you like. So some tracks he's very dynamic. So you've kind of got to have some compression in the plug-in in the chain, because otherwise on the quiet bits he's just not going to be able to hear himself. I know the loud bits, the preamp's going to explode, you know. So
how extreme is it?
Is it like, yeah, there we go.
Well, this isn't going to work on the. This is the only problem is like, what, you've just created a problem for me in the edit now.
Have I?
Yeah.
Sorry, what did I how?
because we can't really do dynamics the way that we. Process this book.
Sorry, Jeff.
Don't whisper. Try and speak at a constant volume. But you can't. You know, the singer has to express themselves in the way that they should represents their art. You know, and I think, I mean, I think if you're more experienced in the studio, you are able to kind of suspend disbelief a little bit. And go like, the drum part is down, it's not sounding the right way, but you know, as a producer or maybe an artist that's made a couple of EPs or a couple of albums, once you've gone through the process, you then understand, it's like, we're going to sort that out later, I don't need to. Because I guess it can become a diversion if you have to sort of, if you're writing a song or crafting something, and it's sort of, sometimes it can feel like you have to stop to adjust the sound when really you want to be carrying on with the musical brain.
I remember those some early recording experiences I had where I was in a band, we tracked it, and then I heard the final mix and it was just wildly different.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, fucking hell. And I hated it. I was just like, That's not what we made. That's not how the band sounds. And obviously, I didn't have either the confidence or the experience to even pinpoint what it was about. But this is what I'm talking about. This is when I was like 18.
Yeah. In hindsight, I mean, I guess it was a while ago now. But do you think you hated it because it was bad, or do you think you hated it because you'd become accustomed to something else?
I think it wasn't what I, as a band member, intended.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Because you know, we talked about.
What changed?
I thought about. Let me pick up on something that we were talking about last week. We were talking about 80s production.
Yeah.
And I think the 80s records that sound really good, the production that the big bombastic 80s sounds are the production is sort of weaved into the performance in a way that's
right, yeah,
pleasing.
Yeah,
however,
yeah,
I was watching do you know the guitar player Stevie Ray Vaughan?
Well, I don't. I'm not a devotee of his work, but okay, obviously, so I used to like guitar play. I still like guitar players, obviously. But for a brief moment in my teenage years, I was into guitar players.
He's an amazing guitar player, but the only records of his I like are his live records.
Right,
because they're fucking astonishing. Because he's a badass.
Because he's playing.
And he's playing, and he plays in this trio, and it's just like bass, guitar, drums, amazing guitar. And then you listen to his records. And it's just, they just suck.
Yeah.
There's just this wall of 80s production between what he's doing and...
Lots of chorus. And...
Also, you know, the drum sounds, everything's super separate. So the snare is like, really
loud.
Okay,
yeah, and right,
nothing sounds integrated.
Yeah.
Whereas like, I'm using another 80s example, Prince... has that 80s boom bust, but it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And it's somehow integrated into the playing and it doesn't kind of get in the way.
Yeah. Is that a feel thing, do you think?
I don't know what it is. I'm thinking about it now. I mean, I think maybe it's because he was a producer as well and was a genius.
Yeah.
And was able. But going back to it, I think the early experiences of recording that I had was as a band, we played. And then suddenly there was all of this production in the way of the band sound and how it came out.
Interesting.
That's
okay.
Not how my snare sounds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Suddenly it's coming back at me.
Yeah.
And I hate it.
And that's another, not that I thought you disagreed, but that's another argument for integrating at least some of the production into the process from the start.
Yeah, exactly. This is what made me think of this. Yeah.
And then going back to your loops thing, I guess that is, it's to your point that actually, if you want a starting point which allows you to move the production in any direction, untreated drum parts or whatever, it could be guitar loops. I think guitars is a bit of a different matter because of the, you know, you're then writing the song, aren't you? But the frustration you've been experiencing with sample packs is one of kind of production standpoint, because you see the direct production going this way, but the drum loop wants to go off in the opposite direction.
Yeah, and I guess as an experienced producer now, I can compartmentalize the way something feels and the way something sounds.
Yeah.
So I can just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes with experience, doesn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what else happened this week, actually?
What else happened this week?
I think I can talk about this.
We can just bleep it out. if you're wondering why the podcast is only 20 minutes long.
I think I can. I had Alan Moulder mix something that I worked on.
I think you can say that, yeah.
I can say that. I won't say the artist actually until it comes out. But
yeah.
I worked on some music and the label wanted to get one of the songs remixed and they went to Moulder. And I was obviously, just a massive...
You were furious.
I was furious.
How dare he? What a charlatan.
Fucking chancer. No, I was really excited because he's a legend, you know, and he's just done so many great records. Anyway, I've got to say, I really feel that his mix took me to school, man.
Really?
Well, yeah.
So you've heard it?
I've heard it, and it's great. It's really good. Gotta say, he was so disrespectful of what the song wanted. Like the opposite of what we were talking about.
Yeah.
He took my mix and just made it better. Like it feels as but I've just realized on a personal note, I scoop out too many low mids.
Right.
Do you know what my plugin of the week is, which is related to this?
It's the low mid adder plugin. From
he's obviously using it.
Yeah.
No, it's a plugin called Metric AB. Did I tell you about it?
No, I don't think so. I feel like I might have had an Instagram ad for it or something. But yeah,
it's a plugin alliance, and you put it on your master bus, and you can AB your mix with anything.
Okay, yeah.
But it also it can isolate any frequencies. So you can hear what's happening in the sub.
With
the two mixes, you can hear what's happening.
Yeah.
It's really great. You can, yeah.
You could sort of plumb your Spotify into it directly, can you? Or
no, you need to drag the files. That would be a cool feature, Plugin Alliance, if you're listening.
I'm pretty sure something. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Maybe it's another plugin that does
that.
Yeah,
actually, there is another one which it's a bit more nuanced, actually. I'm thinking of the one that has kind of filtering in it, which allows you to like, what's my mix going to sound like on Spotify when it's finished? And you press the Spotify button and like Spotify free, Spotify premium, because
that's like, cool. That's a slightly different thing, I think, but it's still cool.
Yeah. Because those streaming services do sound a bit different.
I know last time I was mastering with Matt Colton, he had something that he can,
MP3 at 192 kind of.
And it goes through. He had the YouTube, Spotify, the different algorithms. Anyway, but no, Mulder's mix is great. But he kept in a lot of, 200 to 500.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
But it's fat.
I think the...
I get scared of it sometimes and I just like, ah, Jesus, no, he's just like... Yeah,
I think that area is, it's not where the magic happens necessarily, but it's so easily, like, it's almost, not that there's any rules, but like, it is almost like there's a correct amount of the sort of 200 to 500 range. Or it's even like, maybe it may
because
even
you know
be
when you hear like a really shitty mix?
Yeah.
It's often you think, or maybe it's just me just saying this, but I think your lower mids are all over the place. You know, it's like really boxy and muddy. And
do you know what? Actually, let's talk about bad mixes for a second.
Yeah.
The thing that bothers me about a quote unquote bad mix, it's often the balance is the thing that I hear that's out of whack more than anything.
Right.
Because I think, like, I bet in your Mulder mix, I'd love to hear it, actually.
Yeah, I'll play it. It's good.
But I bet the sense of balance between the instruments in a given section is very well dialed in.
Yeah, that's something I noticed, actually. He was very bold with, like,
it's a fairly rocky song, is it?
It's a really rocky song. Yeah. And it starts with just guitar and vocal.
Yeah.
And the guitar is loud.
Yeah. Like when you say loud, is that loud relative to the vocal or?
It's just louder than my mix. Like it's like, loud, hard panned and loud.
Okay,
and
hard panned. It's nice. Like,
this is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was chatting to the artist about it and she's like, he's really just, he is great. But maybe it's something to do with, because I produced it, I think just having that other, the fresh ear, and him just going, way, and just being less precious about maybe sounds that I might have agonized over.
Yeah.
He's just going, well, we'll turn that up.
Yeah. I think that was, do you remember when, let's give Amanda a little shout out. So Amanda is someone who, Murdstan. Someone who worked with us, she was kind of our assistant for a little bit in 2017 or so, something like that. And then she spent a little bit of time in Iraq and then she's kind of bobbed around Europe.
Yeah. Great engineer.
Yeah.
Superhuman.
But she went to a mix with the masters with, who was it?
Oh, I've forgotten the name of the guy. I didn't know the guy.
Yeah. But she was saying that it was a group of like, 10 of them? And they were, mixed with the masters as a series of many different producers. And a lot of people who'd kind of been to this retreat, this mix of the masters retreat, they'd been expecting to get kind of, here's my top 10 tips for using compression. And this producer didn't do any of that.
Yeah.
They were just sort of like, hung out for like a couple of hours and he told stories. And basically told them to chill the fuck out. And then made, I'm sure it wasn't just Amanda, but made her, I hope you don't mind sharing the story, Amanda, but it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Made her mix like, right, here's a track, just mix it on the board. And it's like, he was like, just make decisions and stay kind of in the flow.
Yeah.
And like any time, so she sort of starts working, and then any time he sort of sees her get hung up on something, he's like, right, take a break. Yeah. Or like,
move on.
And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Totally.
I think, you know, every mix, every person, every music maker has their own process. But personally, I find I do some version of that. Or I try and do some version of that where I just try and make a quick decision, especially at the start of a mix, because it's a mix. It's all the instruments. There's no point. I mean, it's a cliche that, like, no one wants to sit, you know, no one wants to, you sort of say to the artist, like, you don't want to be there at the start when I'm listening to the kick drum for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
You know? But the reality is I'm not listening to the kick drum for 45 minutes.
Something's wrong.
Yeah. But I feel like when I started mixing, I would definitely be agonizing over.
Yeah, I would as well. Definitely.
This and that. And now it's just sort of like, bring the kick drum up and then I.
Well, bring everything up.
Well, yeah, but, like, you know, just it's good to check.
Yeah.
Good to see, like, okay, right, what are we getting in here? I anticipate that there's maybe some spill coming in from somewhere? Does it need some sort of gating? Hopefully not, because I don't really like gating. But, you know, it's like, generally, given the context of the song, does there seem to be enough click in the, you know, does it need a bit more? Is there any issues? Okay, right, cool. And then hopefully I moved on from working in solo with a single hit for like probably max 2 minutes,
yeah.
And then the snare should be up, and then you're right,
yeah,
as quickly as you can possibly do it, get the whole kit in and then get some other instruments.
I think that flow state, I've just done an EP that I produced 3 tracks and mixed them, and then there's a 4th track I didn't produce but I mixed.
Mm.
It was so much easier to do that,
right? Yeah.
To And it was a bigger track, actually. There was more instruments in it. And it was much, much easier to achieve that kind of, not carelessness, but quickness of decision. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was really well recorded. I didn't have to do any mental problem solvings either.
Yeah. And it's the same reason, I'm sure I've mentioned this because I talk about it all the time. It's why I don't really buy this idea of having the same person mix and master a track. You know, obviously, you know, some people can get great results, but what I really like about having a pro mastering engineer, above all else, that, you know, the fancy equipment and, you know, whatever they've got, they don't have your hang-ups and your baggage and your sense of, when we were recording this 4 weeks ago, I had this really strong idea in my head that the snare should be really loud in the mix, you know, and like you carry that.
Which it should be.
Yeah. But you sort of carry, and maybe mastering is not, you know, maybe mastering's too late to kind of sort of address something like that. But often just having someone else work on it is, you know, they discard your hang-ups and just listen to what's happened. What's this song saying to me? And then they listen to the intention of the music.
Yep.
And that can differ from your hang-ups.
Yeah.
At the same time, someone else could mix a track and it can be a disaster.
Yeah, it can be.
Both experience.
Yeah.
Where you're just sort of like, you didn't get it.
Yeah.
It's not what was supposed to happen. But
That's not what I ordered.
Yeah. I wonder if, I mean, I think that probably still happens to the biggest.
Yeah.
The biggest cats.
I was.
I bet even Spike Stentz delivered a few howlers back.
I was working on with an artist quite a while ago, and I heard the same song mixed by, I think it was Brower, Michael Brower, Spike Stent, and someone else.
Okay.
It might have been Elmhurst.
Yeah.
God, it was interesting.
Yeah.
Because they were quite different.
Right.
You know, not, yeah, they were different.
Was there, my brain immediately, because this is the way I'm thinking about mixes lately, I'm sort of like, had they made different decisions about what was important?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I remember Brower's one. being the best actually for that particular one. He just managed to get, I mean, obviously all the mixes were good.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, well, this is shit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You might want to address your low mids in this one. They were all great.
Yeah.
But Brower just, in this instance, seems to squeeze, seemed to just squeeze 10% more energy out of the track than the others.
Yeah. And that was presumably what the music
It was a big
wanted.
Song. It was a big song. And also maybe it was the one that was more similar to what I like.
Yeah.
Loud vocals, loud drums.
Yeah.
Like,
because it is all a matter of taste in the end, isn't it?
But it was very interesting.
Yeah.
And okay, Dan, how should we sign off? Do you want to say anything to the people? No. Clearly not.
No.
Dan's
got nothing,
nothing
to say. Kiss me, you coward. if you've got something to say to us, you can email us at podcast@urchinstudios.co.uk. That is podcast@urchinstudios.co.uk. Don't be shy.
Have a great week, everyone.
If you disagree with that, I think we might have said some things this week that could have been disagreeable.
Could be.
You know, you might just think there is a right way to mix a track. And there's one way and only one way.
If so, we'd love to hear from you. And we'd like to hear your mixes as well.
And we'd like to fight you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.